from the heart of our nation's capital, this is Washington Watch Weekend Edition. Now, here's your host, David Salkeld.
Greetings, fellow patriots. I am David Salkeld, and I'm a constitutional conservative, Christian husband, and homeschool dad. This week on the Weekend Edition of Washington Watch, we'll talk with Representative Mike Johnson of Louisiana about the current state of race relations. Also, Family Research Council's Kathy Roos joins us to discuss the dramatic steps being taken by one school district in Kansas City. But first, on Tuesday of this week, FRC President Tony Perkins was joined by the Ambassador-at-Large for International Religious Freedom, Sam Brownback, as they talked about the latest out of Turkey concerning Pastor Andrew Brunson.
Ambassador, welcome back to Washington Watch.
Thanks, Tony. Appreciate it.
Well, a lot. You have not slowed down since you've taken on the new post as Ambassador of International Religious Freedom, very successful ministerial to advance religious freedom a few weeks ago. But, of course, this case with Andrew Brunson has remained in the spotlight as the Secretary of State's been working on it, the President's been working on it, the Vice President's working on it, you've been working on it, National Security Director's been working on it. Where do we stand? Are we any closer?
Well, I think we're closer in that the administration has taken decisive, aggressive action, and I am so thankful for that. I mean, this President has really stepped up and said, look, you've got one of ours, an American citizen. You're holding him illegally. This is wrong. I've raised it with you diplomatically. I've raised it multiple times. We've raised it in a number of different venues. You haven't acted, so I will. And I think that moves us towards resolution. Now, we'll see what the Erdogan government and what President Erdogan in Turkey does. And so far, he's not indicated any willingness to make the situation right by sending Pastor Brunson back, and then that means, well, okay, we're going to escalate it further. The Turkish economy has taken a huge hit off of this. This case, Tony, all along has not made any sense to me why the president of Turkey is acting this way, why the Turkish government is acting this way on Pastor Brunson, but they have, and I'm delighted this administration has taken such aggressive action in response.
Yeah, it is, and I think that's something that people need to realize, that I know we want to see Pastor Brunson released, but the fact that we have an administration that's advocating for him, when under the previous administration we saw genocide go unchecked in the Middle East, we saw a tremendous rise in religious persecution around the globe, this administration taking it head on. Do you think that this could be an excuse from Erdogan as a means of exiting NATO and moving away from his Western alliances?
Well, I don't know. I have no privy to that type of information, but he's not acting like much of an ally, and he hasn't acted like much of an ally for some period of time. This is a clear religious freedom case, and it's also a clear case about an American citizen. And you wouldn't expect an ally to treat another ally's citizen this way.
I met with Ambassador Bolton a week before last, before I left town, to discuss the issue. Any insight from his meeting yesterday with the Turkish ambassador?
None other than what I've read, that you've read as well, that, Bolton saying what everybody else has said, that, look, until you let Brunson loose, there's not much to talk about here. This is a clear case. He's being held illegally. There's no case against him. And release him. And we've asked quietly, we've asked privately, we've asked consistently. And you won't, and so we're going to continue to apply the pressure until you do.
Now, obviously, we want to stay focused on Pastor Brunson until he's released, but there are many other cases around the country, and we're seeing in some spots, such as India, we're seeing an increase of hostility in India, Pakistan, toward religious minorities. And I know you've got some activities coming up as it pertains to, I believe, India.
Well, I met with the Pakistani ambassador about the situation there. They've got these blasphemy laws that people get sent to jail and can be capital punishment. And they have people on capital punishment for blasphemy laws. that are often misused, or can be mob violence can happen with them as well. And we've been pushing Pakistan very aggressively. Secretary Tillerson put them on the special watch list for a country of being potentially a country of particular concern. And then you just see mob violence, too, towards religious minorities, particularly Christians in Pakistan, Christians and Muslims in India in particular, not exclusively, but particular there, where things will just pop up. You've got a small church in India somewhere, and a mob will gather outside it and destroy the building and kill people inside. And this is just happening with way too much frequency. We raise it. We ask the authorities to protect these religious minorities. Sometimes there's good statements coming out at a national level, at a local level, often not. And we've just got to keep pressing them about this issue, because this is growing and escalating so much.
We discussed this briefly today at our pastor's briefing outside of Cincinnati, Ohio, the issue of the persecuted church in particular, along with other religious minorities around the globe. What can, in our final minute here together, what can the church here in the United States be doing on this issue?
Yeah, I hope they applaud the president about what he's doing to stand up for somebody that's been taken a hostage overseas. I hope they write and they contact their legislators that religious freedom is an important issue to them domestically and internationally, particularly internationally, for as far as what I'm focused on. And they can. And it does matter when they're out at town hall meetings if they'll raise these things as well.
Ambassador Sam Brownback, as always, great to have you on the program. Thanks for taking time out to join us with this update on Pastor Brunson.
Yeah, sure, you bet. God bless you, Tony.
You can find out more when you head over to tonyperkins.com and follow the links. Also, I want to invite you to be a part of keeping Washington Watch on the air. Your involvement through notes of encouragement, prayer, and your financial support are vital as we bring you this program week after week. Simply go to tonyperkins.com and drop us a line or make a contribution. Again, that's tonyperkins.com.
Spend a semester in Washington, D.C. with Family Research Council through our internship program. Come experience the rich history and culture of our nation's capital and immerse yourself in the most important political debates of our day by working to advance family values in a professional work environment under the oversight and mentorship of FRC experts and scholars. This includes a paid stipend and free housing just a block away from Capitol Hill and the Supreme Court. To learn more about the FRC internship program, visit frc.org/internships.
Welcome back to the weekend edition of Washington Watch. I'm your host, David Salkeld. 1 year ago this week, white supremacists held a march in Charlottesville, and on Sunday, they held a second rally in Washington, D.C., which fortunately was a dismal failure. Joining FRC President Tony Perkins to talk about the state of race relations in America is Louisiana Representative Mike Johnson.
Mike, welcome back to Washington Watch.
Hey, Tony. It's always a pleasure.
Hey, let's talk about you. You've been out there on the back in the district during the month of August, holding town hall meetings, talking with folks. And that's always instructive, and I think it's healthy because you hear from people. But you and I were talking about this, that this issue of the racial divide in this country has actually been a topic of conversation.
You know, it has. And you mentioned this was the tragic one-year anniversary of the Charlottesville the fiasco, I call it, the debacle that took place a year ago Saturday. And President Donald J. Trump, you know, tweeted on Saturday. He said, quote, "The riots in Charlottesville a year ago resulted in senseless death and division, and we must come together as a nation." He said, "I condemn all types of racism and acts of violence. Peace to all Americans." Of course, the radical left pounced on it and said it wasn't enough. But it did spark, again, an important conversation. And the so-called Unite the Right rally they tried to pull off on Saturday was really a failure by all accounts. I think they only drew maybe at maximum about 200 people. But the counter-protesters were there by the thousands. But, you know, when I'm in the town halls, Tony, I'm out with constituents. And I serve 15 parishes or counties in Louisiana, 760,000 constituents. people from all walks of life, all races, and when we have a town hall, it gathers everyone, and it's a great kind of family conversation. And you know what I do? I go right to the heart of the issue, and this is what I've been saying, Tony, to the people last few days here, just directly addressing this issue. Say, look, we all know that racism is wrong, but why is it wrong? And my challenge to our folks is that they should not take for granted any longer that the younger people, the high school students, college kids, the next generation coming behind us, that they understand really why that is wrong. And so we spend a little time unpacking that and talking about why it violates the most fundamental principles of our great nation. I think it's been
a
pretty healthy debate.
You look at what the Constitution Declaration says. Clearly, from a civic standpoint, it lays out why this ethnic divide that is in our country is wrong. But from a Christian perspective, we go back to the fact that every human being is created in the image of God. Therefore, they have that value that we should place on one another is intrinsic because we're created in the image of God. Now, that does not mean that everything that people chooses to do makes them equal. But they are equal from a standpoint of, as a human being, regardless of their race, regardless of their orientation, whatever. They're all to be respected because of the fact that they are created in the image of God.
I think that's very well said. And that's what I've been talking about in these large groups, diverse groups in my district, about this, that what you just said, Tony, is the central idea of America. It is the central premise is that we boldly declare the self-evident truth that all men are created equal, and they're endowed by their creator, our God, with the same inalienable rights. And the whole point of that is precisely what you said. It's a biblical truth that the founders recognize that all of us are made in the image of God, and so every single person has inestimable dignity and value. And our value is not related in any way to the color of our skin or what neighborhood we live in or what we made on the ACT. I mean, those are irrelevant things. Our value is inherent because it's given to us by God. And so what follows then logically, and this is what I've been talking with the crowds about, is that any fool who contends that he has some sort of natural right of supremacy over his neighbors violates the very foundational creed of his country. And as we know as Christians and those who believe in the Bible, that fool would also be violating the greatest commandments of the God who created him. Because obviously when they stopped Jesus and asked him, what are the greatest commandments? He said, well, love the Lord your God with all your heart, mind, and soul, and love your neighbor as yourself. So if you hate your neighbor or you think you're supreme over your neighbor by some natural right, you clearly don't understand the basic rules of the Creator who gave you all of your rights. And so that's an important thing to, I think, walk young people through logically to show them the fallacy of that whole argument.
See, the key element of bringing people together, as I said earlier, is an understanding of our orientation in terms of our beginnings. Where did we come from? Who created us? Who establishes the rules? And as you just pointed out, where Jesus said we're to love our neighbor as ourself, when we push that from the public square, when we remove that element, that basic understanding that there is a creator and that he created us all equal. Now, again, we can make different choices and the outcomes will be different, but we're all created equal. When we remove that from the understanding of our children, how can we hope to have unity in our society?
That's precisely the point. When you erase these basic truths, then something has to fill the void. And so any crazy argument or idea then competes there. Now, we believe in the free marketplace of ideas, and unlike the Southern Poverty Law Center and some of these other characters on the radical left, the fringe left, we're not in the business of trying to censor and silence viewpoints that we disagree with. We want all those ideas to be brought out of the public square so they could be fairly debated and evaluated. But we also have truth like Elijah. We have confidence in the truth that at the end of the day, the truth of the capital T will bear out. And so so long as we're allowed to do that, I think we have an obligation to share that truth.
Yeah, and that's the key difference between the political left and the political right in this country, that the right, we don't mind having the debate. Put all of the put your best argument out there, and we'll take it. We'll debate it. We'll discuss it. We'll debate it in a civil way, but we will with civility. But we're not afraid of the arguments of the left, where you look at the left and they simply want to shut down the discussion because ultimately they cannot defend their ideology.
Well, that's exactly right. And if you listen to people like the SPLC and their advocates, you know, they regard the biblical truth that you and I have been talking about for the last few minutes as offensive. And so if you ask them, they would really love to push that out of the public square so that all these young people, college students and high school students, never get a chance to hear it.
Mm-hmm.
And
right.
So that's what we have to defend against every day, and you and I do that and so many others, to ensure that we have the right to remind Americans of our very foundational, fundamental principles, the ones that the nation was founded upon. And if we lose that, we lose it at our great peril, because those are the things at the end of the day that draw us back together. You know, Lincoln, when he was given his first inaugural, you know, following all the tragedy and going after the Civil War and everything that happened, he said, we have to appeal to the better angels of our nature. And that's what all this is about, drawing people to those central truths so that they can work together, they can be civil again. We can address these problems, this increasing division and the coarsening of our culture, because it's fueled so often by vitriol in our politics and our public discourse, based upon a tragic misunderstanding of these foundational truths. So that's why all this ties together. That's why it's so important. That's why an anniversary like this tragedy in Charlottesville is worthy of our time to unpack some of this to people we're talking with. And I encourage everybody listening, your audience is savvy. They get this. The admonition is, don't take for granted. Talk about it more.
Right. Absolutely. All of these things. Have these discussions around the dinner table with your children. Have them with your family. Don't, you know, we're afraid oftentimes to talk about these issues. And that's a part of what Washington Watch wants to do, is equip you to be able to talk with confidence. Mike Johnson, as always, great to have you on the program, and enjoy your time back in the district.
Thanks, Tony. Appreciate you.
To find out more about Representative Johnson, just head over to TonyPerkins.com and follow the links. Also, a quick reminder that your generous contributions to Family Research Council enable us to continue making these programs available, and you can donate when you visit TonyPerkins.com. We'll be right back with more Washington Watch right after this.
Let's keep the momentum going in this fall's election by voting your values. If you're like me, you care a lot about where our culture is headed, and now is the time to stand for biblical truth and fight for faith, family, and freedom in the public square. To be equipped for this mission, mark your calendars for the Values Voter Summit on September 21st to the 23rd in Washington, D.C. Speakers include Donald Trump, Mike Pence, Oliver North, Laura Ingraham, Steve Scalise, Dana Lash, and Ben Carson. Visit valuesvotersummit.org or call 1-877-372-2808 for more information.
Welcome back to the weekend edition of Washington Watch. I'm David Salkeld. It's that back-to-school time of year, and in North Kansas City, two new elementary schools debuted with gender-neutral bathrooms, forcing boys and girls to share the same restroom facilities. Joining Tony to discuss this issue is FRC's Senior Fellow and Director of Human Dignity, Kathy Roos.
Kathy, welcome back to Washington Watch.
Thanks so much for having me on, Tony.
Now, Kathy, you were sounding the alarm over some of this that was happening in Virginia, and it's moving across the country.
Yes, it is. And, you know, in Kansas City, I thought this might stem from a good impulse on the part of the schools, you know, schools wanting to avoid having to endorse, like, the fake science position that some girls have male sex organs, so they should be able to use, you know, the girls' room when they're actually biological boys. But this is Kansas City, and Kansas City is a hard left city. They are so far left that my husband Austin reminded me that they are one of the cities that tried to adopt CEDAW, which is a UN treaty, a really radical treaty that wants to abolish Mother's Day in all nations on the globe. You know, so Kansas City is not doing this for good reasons. They're doing it for bad reasons. They're doing it. They're experimenting on kids. They're going to make boys and girls very uncomfortable. They're pretending that there's no real difference between male and female, and they're imposing it on kids. With, as you say, they have no other options. There's not going to be another place for these children to go. And importantly, Tony, these are not single-sex bathrooms where, like you might see at a coffee shop, where you go in, you open the door, right. And it's a right. These they have communal spaces where the boys and girls are going to have to be washing up together in a common trough, they call it. So these are still private spaces. They're private spaces that girls are not going to be comfortable having boys in my opinion.
So are they going to have, like, bathroom monitors now, teachers that are in the bathrooms watching what these elementary school kids are doing?
Well, funny you say that. And researching and looking at another news story on this, one of the teachers said, well, this is a good thing because now the teachers can come right into the bathrooms and we can just monitor and we can be right in there. Thinking, this is progress? You know, one of the things this these news stories are reporting is that how these schools are touting the openness in the classroom and the bringing down of the walls in the classroom, and somebody described it as, well, this is just the same kind of development in the bathrooms. Now, if you want something funny, you go look at what second wave feminists say about this. They are fighting mad about this. They say that it's taking away safe spaces for women. One of the feminists I was reading said, you know, women's washrooms were safe places for me. I don't expect to be sexually harassed by men in there, but I wouldn't feel safe in these types of bathrooms. What if I'm in there alone with one man or a group of men? I can't imagine trying to go to the bathroom, fix my makeup, and then being hit on or harassed by some expletive deleted. So the second wave feminists don't like this. I don't like this. I think this is just giving in to the transgender mentality that there's no difference between boys and girls or men and women.
Now, Kathy, people have to realize that it's not going to be isolated. These are not isolated or going to remain isolated. I mean, we're not going to have just like a couple of elementary schools here that try this as an experiment. This, what we're seeing is starting with elementary. There's a reason they're starting with elementary schools.
Yes, right.
Because then it moves its way on up until it is just pervasive in the culture.
Yeah, it's easy to bully and push little kids around. And that's, I see this as leftists bullying little kids in schools and making them do this thing that's going to be uncomfortable for them. You know, it's funny, as I talk to women and men about this particular development, the men I've talked to who are, you know, conservative politically say, well, maybe this is okay, maybe this is, you know, a way to avoid having to endorse the transgender agenda. All the women, Tony, have said, this is a bad idea. I don't like this. I'm not comfortable with this. And, you know, that may reflect this reality that there really is something different between men and women. Look, little girls, women, they go into bathrooms for different reasons. You know, you go into a bathroom, you can use a bathroom to go in and cry. You can fix your makeup. You can adjust what you're wearing. I mean, it's a private space that women use in a certain way. I don't know how men use the private space of their bathrooms, but I can just tell you, all the women I've talked to are not comfortable with this idea at all. But these little girls in elementary school, they don't have a voice. They're not going to be able to veto this. They're going to be bullied into being forced to use bathrooms with boys.
The Kansas City Star, of course a liberal publication, promoting this as the best thing since sliced bread, quotes the director of organizational development for the school district, saying, we had such positive feedback from students, teachers, and parents. Since then, this was about the project last year, since then we have decided to replicate the concept in any new construction. That included the newly built Rising Hill Elementary on Northeast 108th Street. But here's a quote from a parent, Melanie Austin. I think it's great. Her daughter is a first grader at the district's Crestview Elementary and in gifted classes once a week at the Innovation Center. Quote, you just don't know what gender a kid might identify as. This helps everyone to feel comfortable, accepted, end quote. So many problems with that statement. I don't know where to begin.
Right. Well, here, what these policies are doing are putting lots and lots and lots of especially little girls, but also boys, into very uncomfortable positions under the guise of sort of helping other kids who might feel uncomfortable. You know, we've got to remember that girls are primarily the children that unfortunately may have been victims of assault or abuse, okay? They vastly outnumber gender-confused kids, vastly outnumber. So you're now taking this much larger population of girls who are vulnerable, who are sensitive, and they're putting them in a very, very uncomfortable position. and what these girls and young women will say, and I've heard them testify in front of school boards, they will say, my abuser told me I couldn't tell anybody, I couldn't complain, and now the schools are basically saying the same thing. We're doing this, and don't complain. You got to.
Yeah, that's exactly right. When we were kids, if you attempted to do something like now that's being mandated, you would go to the principal's office. Now, if you complain about it, you go to the principal's office.
Right. I guarantee you these kids got the message loud and clear that they're supposed to like this and they're supposed to shut up and don't complain. And if you're not, you know, especially these little girls who may feel vulnerable, I have such a heart for these children, both little boys and girls. I mean, as I'm talking this through, I'm mentioning my husband again. He was kind of giving me the male perspective and saying, that would be so uncomfortable for little boys to do bathroom things if there are little girls right next door.
Oh, absolutely.
I mean, even just the basics, you know, and little boys think girls are icky. They don't want to be in the bathroom with them and vice versa. So it's all of these realities of human nature we're supposed to forget. It's fake science, and we're forcing these kids to deny reality, deny their God-given instincts. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Very quickly, Kathy, what can parents do? What can they do?
Well, I encourage parents to seek an unusual ally, and that is in the second wave feminists, or at least go get their arguments. Their arguments are so powerful on these issues. Take them to your school board. You'll shut up your school board if you start making these feminist arguments. They are unanswerable. But I like sending parents to people like our friend Elizabeth Johnston, Activist Mommy. Activist Mommy has so many creative ideas about.
Well, and by the way, I just got a message from her. She was, because we were talking about social media earlier, she was banned from Facebook. She doesn't know why, but she was suspended from Facebook for 3 days with no explanation as to why. Might be that she's already been talking about this topic.
Right, might be. She was making too much sense. They had to shut her down.
Incredible. Kathy, thanks so much for staying on this issue. I know this is something you've been working on to protect the kids, and I appreciate you coming on to talk about it today.
Oh, thank you so much for having me.
Well, unfortunately, that's all the time we have for today. I'm David Salkeld, thanking you for being with us, and I encourage you to be back here next week for the weekend edition of Washington Watch with Tony Perkins.
Washington Watch Weekend Edition is powered by the Family Research Council and is entirely listener-supported. For more information on anything you've heard today, or to find out how you can partner with us in our ongoing efforts to promote faith, family, and freedom, visit TonyPerkins.com. Also, to leave a comment about Washington Watch, call our watch line at 1-866-372-7234. That's 1-866-372-7234.